Well, I guess this is what they call public speaking. And I want you to know that's always made me nervous. So much so that I practice reading so that I won't have to, you know, speak freely. After all, a certain amount of free speech can get you into trouble. So I've brought along a few things, one which I've memorized particularly for tonight here at the opening of the Allied Hi-Fi store on Rush and Walton, I believe. Yes, Rush and Walton. It's a little poem called I Wish the Rent Were Heaven Sent. That's the whole poem, and I want you to know that those short ones are the ones that I like the best. For example, let us honor, if we can, the vertical man, though we value none but the horizontal one, is another short thing that I like. Or limericks, actually, that's the way I was introduced to reading. There was a young girl named Bright whose speed was faster than light. She left one day in a relative way and returned on the previous night. Those short, pithy poems that say so much, you can make them up yourselves, you see, then you have no problem memorizing them. A short poem would be, winter is just dying for spring to come. Actually, a poem begins in delight, if it is a poem, and ends with wisdom. Of course, if you use that definition, which Robert Frost gave to a poem, it also applies to a human being. A life begins in delight and ends in wisdom. You know, if it's a wise life. So I brought along some of the things that I'd like to read for you, and one in particular, a parable. A paraphable, actually, that goes, once upon a summer sidewalk, there was a little ant whose name was Smith. Now, Aunt Smith had been working all morning long in the grass, doing what ants do when they're working in the grass, but now it was afternoon and he was goofing. He was making his willy-nilly way across the sidewalk, not stepping on cracks, feeling the heat of the sun under his many little feet. And everything was wonderful in Aunt Smith's universe, until he looked up and he saw above him a huge, horrible, monstrous, buzzing fly, whose name was Smith, too. I want you to know that Aunt Smith hated Fly Smith, because the fly could fly and he couldn't fly. He wasn't a flying ant, and there were other differences, you see. And so, when Aunt Smith looked up and he saw this huge hand arcing through the air, capturing Fly Smith and destroying him, is it any wonder that Aunt Smith sort of chuckled to himself? How was he to know that that hand's foot would step on him? And how was Mr. Smith to know that he had just killed two Smiths? It's that kind of devious thinking that you find in the works of Thomas Wolfe. He has here something that is called Dreams of Time and Guilt. Now, I don't know if we've progressed anywhere from the time of Thomas Wolfe. Maybe we have the same troubles today. But over on page 262, there we are. He has this beautiful dream that he dreamt. See if you've ever felt this way. There was a kind of dream which I can only summarize as dreams of guilt and time, chameleon-like in all their damnable and unending fecundities. They restored me to the whole huge world that I had known, the billion faces and the million tongues. And they restored it to me with the malevolent triumph of a passive and unwanted ease. My daily conflict with number and amount, the huge accumulation of my years of struggle with the forms of life, My brutal and unending efforts to record upon my memory each brick and paving stone of every street that I had ever walked upon, each face of every thronging crowd in every city, every country, with which my spirit had contested its savage and uneven struggle for supremacy, they all returned now. Each stone, each street, each town, each country, yes, even every book in the library whose loaded shelves I had tried vainly to devour at college. They returned upon the wings of these mighty, sad, and somehow quietly demented dreams. I saw and heard and knew them all at once, was instantly without pain or anguish, with the calm consciousness of God, masters of the whole universe of life, against whose elements I had contended vainly for all knowledge for so many years. And the fruit of that enormous triumph, the calm and instant passivity of that inhuman and demented immortality, was somehow sadder and more bitter than the most galling bitterness of defeat in my contention with the multitudes of life. Well, that's a pretty profound thing that he wrote. Actually, Thomas Wolfe is attempting, in what he's trying to say here, to reveal himself. Very difficult thing to do, actually. It requires sometimes special circumstances. For example, I would like to do something that I've had the pleasure of doing in certain saloons on the north side of Chicago. This is a kind of letting your mind wander. It's called word jazz. And it's really quite simple. You just listen to the sounds that your thinking makes. For example, there was a young man who came into our town. He was extraordinarily tall. He seemed to be a head taller than everyone else, and a very dark, lean look about him. And we all knew he was special, a sort of stranger. We waited to see what he would do. Well, he got us all in the big auditorium that they had, and they had the light on him. The only light that was shining was on him. And he began to chant. It sounded like a sort of rock and roll that went, the flibberty jib on the bibberty bop, oh, the flibberty jib on the bibberty bop. And we didn't understand this at all. It didn't make any sense whatsoever. Consequently, we just listened until the infection of the rhythm caught us. And we began to chant with him. Before you know it, the whole place was chanting the flibberty jib on the bibberty bop. And he was just standing up in front in the light saying, yes, yes, yes. We were quite happy with this arrangement. But there were certain critics in our town who weren't in the limelight, and they didn't like it. So they began to cut up our stranger. You see, they said, listen, the flibberty jib on the bibberty bop doesn't mean anything. We knew this. However, they began to make him take himself seriously. And when they did, he lost something. The spark went out of him. He got us into the big auditorium many times after that. But it wasn't the same. It was flat, and we didn't feel like chanting. So eventually he had to leave our town. We saw him getting smaller and smaller on the horizon as he walked away, saying, no, no, no. Well, we lived through the boredom of the time that followed somehow, talking about what was once, what might have been if. We sort of hung between the world of is and should be, until the miracle happened that we never thought would happen. Another stranger came into our town, and he too was tall and thin, and he got us in the big auditorium. And the same chant was chanted again. How are things in your town? I think that about covers the length of the tape. Thank you so much.